I'm here with Charles Bronstein of the Comic Books Legal Defense Fund, and we're here at Baltimore Comic Con 2014. And I just had a couple questions for you about, you know, the type of work that you guys are doing now.
Sure.
I went to your presentation earlier today about the Comics Code and how that affected things for a while. So today, what is the biggest activity that you guys find yourself working on?
The fund works on a variety of fronts. We're a nonprofit organization that protects the freedom to read, and it manifests by providing legal defense in cases where individuals or retailers or artists are facing a legal case, either criminal or civil, and we will get involved in identifying lawyers and paying for legal bills. And a lot of those cases you don't hear about because we're able to successfully get them dismissed before they have to go to court. The more public-facing area that we're working on is in education and school and library censorship areas involving comic books. And so to that end, we're a sponsor of Banned Books Week, the annual celebration of the freedom to read, happening September 21 through 27 this year. The theme is comic books, and so we've created a variety of resources at cbldf.org to support the theme. And we also make tools to assist in literacy and education, like Raising a Reader, how comics and graphic novels can help your kids love to read. We also this year published a handbook for comics creators about working with libraries. That's what they can do to be active in their communities. So the activity really kind of boils down into those two areas. And then the third area, which is what you saw today, where we provide historical presentations, lectures, and workshops on comic censorship issues, both current and historical.
And while the organization has been in existence, what effect have you seen the web have? Because to some degree, if you can publish on the web, at least in America, no one can censor you. On the other hand, you know, at least for many people, they do have a goal of getting published. You know, there's a certain degree of respectability that still exists with that. But have you guys had any things that you've helped people with when they've published stuff on the web?
There's a couple of facets to that question. One is that we were very actively involved in the generation of cases that was coming through between 2000 and 2004 that were attempting to place restrictions on the internet. And there were calls for mandatory filtering. There were calls for different sorts of limitations on access as to minors for internet content, or, you know, the inverse of that, different restrictions that content providers had to oblige to. And we were very active in fighting those cases and largely successful so that the web can behave in the way that you describe it behaving today. And so historically, you know, that's been a big area. More currently, we find the activity involving prosecutions from the web is actually in the readership space, where individual readers that are downloading comics are finding themselves being prosecuted under obscenity charges or prosecuted under obscenity charges related to the expression of child pornography ideas. And the problem with those cases is that the child pornography laws, rightly so, were designed to combat the physical abuse of real people, not to punish people for looking at creepy drawings. And law enforcement increasingly is attempting to punish people for looking at creepy drawings. And so we have to do a lot of work in that area. And again, we've been largely successful in recent years of shutting those cases down before they have to go to court. But they are still ongoing, and it's something that will never be determined until it reaches a court precedent.
Yeah, that's actually really great, because I was actually thinking about that recently as I've been getting more into some comics that were published, you know, a while ago. I was wondering, would I be able to purchase Lost Girls, you know, or would that you know, lead to me getting obscenity, you know, charges, you know?
Well, Lost Girls is a specific case, was very well managed by Chris Staros, the publisher of Top Shelf Productions, where in advance of publication, he actively campaigned to get reviews and to get experts to speak out about it, where it's not a slam dunk that it's going to be it's that it's worth prosecuting. Because, you know, prosecutions are a lot about statistics. You know, did I win? You know, what's my, you know, anti-crime stats? you know, for police, you know, how, you know, how many jackets did I open, how many jackets did I close. And so, you know, Lost Girls is fine because it's unlikely to prevail in prosecution. But you still have other areas of speech that, you know, are bubbling up through fandom or bubbling up through Artist Alley or bubbling up through webcomics where people are expressing their life stories. And, you know, part of human life is sexuality, and not every aspect of sexuality is pleasant. And so, you know, people that are exploring those areas are at risk. And so, you know, it's still a very hot-button open question, and it kind of corresponds to all of these difficult areas that are part of living in the 21st century, where nobody over 25 knows what it means to be under 25. And you've got kids growing up with extremely sophisticated technology at their disposal and, you know, extremely volatile hormones raging. And what they're doing with each other is legal, but documenting it may not be. And so it's all part of the same matrix of we just need to talk to each other more about these issues.
On a slightly different note, but again, going back to what you were talking about today during your presentation, a lot of the mainstream comics now, they're using a rating system analogous to what's going on with movies, not exactly, you know, similar.
More analogous to video games, but go on.
Yeah. So my question is, do you think that ends up being a net positive or a net negative? Because on the one hand, it does give a very rough rubric for parents. On the other hand, perhaps leads to some self-censorship or something like that.
Well, I think the thing with rating systems is that they, when they function properly, they are voluntary mechanisms put in place by the individual publisher for their own business goals. And they're not external compulsory mechanisms that either you need to submit to because of government intervention or you have to submit to because of barriers to distribution. And so if, you know, for instance, Marvel or Oni or Image want to place a, you know, T for teen on their book or a M for mature on their book or whatever it ends up being, that's absolutely fine. That's their prerogative. You know, where ratings become toxic is where it's a mandate that creates a barrier to distribution, that if you don't do it, then, you know, we're not going to carry your book. Or if you, you know, if you do the ratings, there was a proposal that we fought in video games because of the precedent that would have set on comics, where I believe California was attempting to make criminal penalties for any individual retailer that sold a minor, a M or adult rated video game. And the problem with that is that the rating system the ESRB put together is for the guidance for parents. And so parents understand what they're buying. And so consumers understand what they're buying. To suddenly create a criminal penalty for a retailer that sells a 18 and up game to a 16-year-old, you know, that's not what it's for. That's not the correct mechanism. And you can have a conversation about should 16-year-olds be playing 18, you know, plus games. And that kind of depends on the parent. You know, the parent needs to be involved, but the law oughtn't be involved. And so, you know, in response to what you're saying, we really don't have an opinion about whether a publisher wants to do a rating system. That's their business point of view, and that's their business prerogative, and we respect that. Where it becomes toxic and problematic is where that is a compulsory thing that has an effect on content.
So as my final question, and related to that, why do you think it is that comics have ratings, but completely textbooks don't? You know, they have genres, we have YA, but we don't really have a rating system. And in fact, as I've been exploring a lot of YA books this year, some of them have quite explicit content within them anyway. So YA does not function as okay for children by default.
Sure. I think that the issue with I would say that prose books do suggest guidance. Like the publishers selling into the juvenile spaces do put ages 4 and up, ages 9 and up, ages 12 and up. Generally, adult fiction does not place that kind of guidance on there. And again, that's all business prerogative. I think the reasons that there's a desire to rate comics is because comics thrive on the power of the static image. And so there is a sensitivity in our culture to images which can be received more passively than prose. A book is only as filthy as one's own mind. And some of us are blessed with very clean minds, and some of us are blessed with very guilt, with very dirty minds. And so, you know, when you read a passage in a YA book about, you know, a sexual scenario, you know, you're really only going to be able to visualize within your own experience and within your own realm of imagination, which the same is not true in a book. You know, when you open up Watchmen, it is Dave Gibbons' rendition of Dr. Manhattan. And that's not going to change. And so, you know, the power of the static image, I think, is what leads to that impulse. And again, I have no objection to it either way, so long as it's a voluntary affair, providing guidance for people.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk
with
me.
My pleasure. Thank you.